I think we're at a turning point of history really right now. One could have said that now for 5 years. The reason I've been so prodigious, I feel completely driven by world events because I do feel we're at a very fateful moment in the history of the human race. So I'll go right to it now. I've been asked to speak on the topic, why is there a war in Afghanistan? And I could focus on the innumerable suspicious circumstances of this latest U.S. aerial war on a poverty-stricken country, its typical overriding of international law, its strategic fit with U.S. corporate designs for foreign oil resources, and the U.S. past strategic support of the very enemy said to be targeted, like Noriega, like Saddam, and like Milosevic in the past. But instead, I'm going to situate this latest U.S.-led war on a third world region within a much wider global process. I'm going to consider America's new war as the latest expression of a much deeper and wider terrorist campaign of an emergent totalitarian pattern of instituting world corporate rule with no limit of occupation or accountability beyond itself. Unhappily, it is not easy to see Canada's foreign policy role in all of this as anything other than obedient subjugation to this transnational corporate agenda at every senior level of decision-making. And I'm thinking of the trade negotiators at DFAT and all the way up to the minister when I say that. The unseen terrorist pattern. The gravest problem with corporate market fundamentalism is that it is decoupled from society's life conditions. Its entire model is. It is, in fact, incapable of recognizing any value to anything except corporate value adding, which it is assumed should regulate all peoples and all conditions of life on Earth for, quote, efficiency and maximum growth. To this point, there has been no outside margin, and this is the totalitarian nature of this project or program, there's been no outside margin to this total doctrine's demands or government subservience to them. Since the commitments of a society to safeguard the lives of its members and to ensure that they're able to express themselves as human is the measure of its civilization, this global corporate program is not merely uncivilized, it is beneath recognition terrorist in its meaning. For if we recognize the real meaning of terrorism, and I don't mean the meaning of terrorism that we've had with Bill C-35 and C-36, which effectively say, you know, as in I think Section 27, intended to cause serious interference with an essential facility or system, I think we see the disconnection of the very meanings of words from their actual natural meaning. Terror without terror. Terrorism without terror. They're talking systems, not people's terror. Now, I'm going to define terrorism with some fidelity to the actual meaning of terrorism, unlike our government laws, which are part of this global program. And I would say that the real meaning of terrorism is to instill in innocent people fear for their life security, to coerce their compliance to an armed faction's demands. And I think we see this pattern increasingly at work across World Life Organization. Under the financial dictates of the corporate market, backed by rising extremes of armed force, citizens everywhere are subjected to a low-intensity campaign of destabilization and fear that leaves no aspect of their lives secure. Now, I have a lot of documentation of this, but I won't be able to get into that today. But I think this is true even in Canada, one of the world's most well-off societies. The silent terror grows. Its vast water heritage is so in peril that people unprecedentedly die from its pollution, while our governments sign its future away to U.S.-engineered trade and investment dictates. The minds of our young are so shackled by a culture of violence and demands to buy that their capacity to think is stunted, while their public education is increasingly structured as a marketing site to reproduce students as compliant servo mechanisms, all part of the coming GATT, too, or GATS. The rule of law is cumulatively overridden by transnational trade edicts to subjugate all that exists for corporate profit. Try to find a limit. There isn't one. Riot squads club and gas unarmed opponents, and civil liberties are stripped by Orwellian security machinations. Always the threat is against life and life means. That's the design of it, and I don't think it's intent. It's preconscious. Always the threat is against life and life means to coerce compliance to corporate demands. Our country's national symbol for the hemisphere, healthcare for all, is degraded and privatized for profit as citizens are deprived of family positions by the hundreds of thousands. 30,000 in my own city of Guelph are without family physicians. Corporate motor commodities and schemes now so lay waste to Canada's land and water and public ways that it may be unsafe to breathe the air, walk freely, or count on a forest or aquatic habitat being there in a year. The vocation of serving fellow human and planetary life by one's daily service of work, our humanity itself, is slashed in every life function. Always the command is to turn money into more money for corporate investors or do not survive. Well, I think this is real terror. In fact, I would say it's the very threat to economic and financial security that the government legislation itself recognizes as terror is upon us. But as a structure, the U.S.-led structure here, you operate by projection. You project onto those who oppose you what you're doing yourself. It's a secret to their ideology and indeed their law of motion. The shape of this beast's ever grosser lines dwarfs the monster beheld by St. John of the Apocalypse or the boundless greed of Duryodhana of the tale told by the Mahabharata. We live, in fact, under an increasingly global reign of terror, but our disconnection from the meaning is its triumph. Instead, we're made to believe that the terror comes from pre-industrial fanatics in poor countries. The world has been usurped by a pattern familiar in the microcosm, but not yet decoded at the macro level, a revolt against human society itself. The historical maturation of nations after the world's greatest depression and war was called the Great Transformation by Karl Polanyi, but the Great Reversal has not yet been publicly deciphered. Its meaning is primeval. It is the atavistic return of society to an unaccountable male gang seeking to dominate the world. We see this pattern in the 9/11 war. Its public phase began with thousands of people of mixed nationalities, most American civilians, were killed by suicide bombers of a foreign male gang of Islamic fundamentalists. The numbers, by the way, interestingly changing from 6,900 to 3,900 to 2,772, just part of this whole operation and with very little publicity. Each side then duly proclaimed the other the embodiment of evil, same story. Each repudiated the law from start to finish, same story. And both killed as many innocent people as got in the way of their war to rule other countries, same story. While the gang leaders throughout stayed unscathed behind walls of armed protectors, both called each other cowardly murderers. There is little difference in moral substance between these atavistic gangs, although a megalomaniac rhetoric of each proclaims direct backing from God. Both sides are mass killers, and both systematically destroy civilians and their means of life with sanctimonious justification, overriding all accountability to truth or due legal process. Both proclaim their mission as the work of divine justice, and both destroy the lives and human conditions of innocent others with a pathological abandon that takes the breath away. That is, in fact, their function. It is of demonstration, destructions, and killings, to command by terror and seize whatever is wanted, with complicit governments like Canada's and Britain's barking and crouching behind, the real deal is struck beneath public notice. Incalculably more innocent people in terror in exchange for incalculably more oil supplies for U.S.-led corporations and, as a side deal, $200 billion in further giveaways of public revenues to corporations and the very rich in the U.S., another unseen aspect. But the primeval criminal gang structure is not tracked for two reasons. The first is that saturating conditioning disconnects people from reality. It is easy. Just tell the people someone is attacking them and then denounce anyone who protests as unpatriotic and a threat to the nation's security. These are Hermann Göring's words. and they transmit the code of this gang form of rule. Concealed under the most ludicrous lies, its coercion reigns supreme. Already university employees and indeed a talk show host have been unconstitutionally suspended in the U.S. for pointing out the most undeniable truths. The disorder goes to the heart of the ruling corporate psyche. Consider the pattern. Now moving into images of manliness and how the surrounding culture transmits this pattern. The adolescent group mind plots in secret, and I'm thinking of working right up to the war room. The adolescent group mind plots in secret behind the closed doors of secluded forts for control of the rest of society to maximize the gang's private take. I really think we're at an adolescent gang stage of history. Sex and violence are the ruling images of its kingdom of ever bigger deals and attacks on a designated outgroups. The gang's ethos of power and control pervades the larger society with a barbaric code of acquisitive stratagem, takeover of others' territories, continuous extraction of gang tribute, and indiscriminate violence and armed force at will. Throughout group slogans and tough talk to reinforce the bonds of male and servant female bravado in the face of ever greater extremes of life deprivation, confiscation, and fear. The universal insecurity the many feel is, as the resistance grows, played back to them as what the gang is protecting them from. The logic of rule by force is then openly declared to protect them from the terror. The U.S. president declares an ultimatum to the world. You are either with us or for the terrorists. And after starving Afghanistan is carpet bombed, his administration proclaims, who will be next? Charles Krauthammer, glorious name, declares the mood in Time magazine. Quote, America is no mere international citizen. It is a dominant power in the world, more dominant than any since Rome. Accordingly, America is in a position to reshape norms. How? By unapologetic and implacable demonstrations of will. This is as the bombs fall. The extortion racket of the neighborhood is, in a word, writ large as the international war against terrorism, a war in which those who monopolize terror are licensed to exempt itself and themselves from its meaning. Lacking the resources of character to compete head-on, the global corporate gang everywhere relies on controlled images instead. And I think this is its peculiar quality. It's a kind of a public relations totalitarianism in the first instance. The image set loved most by the gang's crowds are performed around the clock. Symbolic male gangs and corporate logos attacking one another day in and day out in competitive spectacles, all constructed to glorify the riches of the winners. The never-ending sudden-death dramas hold the many in thrall, and so the actual violent struggles of life and death in the wider world are diverted from. They are displaced onto the sports or the war screen as a universal marketing site for corporations and banks. Behind the scenes, the real action goes on. Instruments of transnational trade and investment, competitive mergers and privatization and deregulation of the public sector are the deep booty system. Outside of the manufactured conflicts of the mass spectacle games the many have their hearts and minds fastened to, the world is restructured as a pay-on-time system where the payments issue more and more demand for all to pay. As this or that entertainment product wins or loses in the Colosseum, the gang's trade lawyers secretly construct hundreds of new laws behind everyone's backs in which only the rich can win, from outside the market, by the way. The new world order is backed by iron cages, starvation, rains of gas in clubs for resistors, and genocide for peoples from which the latest declared enemy comes. But few dare to name the game. And so its order is ritualized with ever more one-sided shows of mass destruction and violence discharged on the dispossessed to demonstrate the inevitability of its rule. Outside the bombing of poor peoples, whatever stands in the way of the global corporate gang's axings of expenditures on life is declared an obstacle to its freedom, in revealing slogan, a protectionist barrier. Any public law to regulate, protect, or retain control over any sector of domestic economies is prohibited. There is a prize for all this, and it is a prize without end. All free existence which corporate vehicles can reconstruct to extract profit from, without limit. In the end, the global corporate gang wages a war on life organization itself. I think it's really a metaphysical meaning here. The world in the revealing terms of the occupiers is a limitless market opportunity for, quote, maximum penetration and control. Yet in the era of the global knowledge economy, there is a vulnerability of this reign of fear and rapine which cannot be overcome. It can only work where its deep pattern evades exposure. Now I move into the final part, which I call the new totalitarianism. The deep pattern of the male corporate gang in its global form is, as David Rockefeller put it at the June 1991 Bilderberg meeting in Baden, Germany, a, quote, supranational sovereignty of an intellectual elite and world bankers, which is surely preferable to the national autodetermination practiced in past centuries. As such a structure of world rule, it is accomplished by the same financial and media system deciders that put Tony Blair in office in Britain and George Bush into the White House against majority vote. Transnational corporations have marketed and